back to our friends in the media. As usual, you are very welcome guests here today and for the rest of our proceedings. You're more than welcome. So thank you, and all the best for 2017. Dr. Ngubane, thank you very much, and welcome, sir. The program, ladies and gentlemen, is that we have Dr. Ngubane from 9:30. We have scheduled that should be over and done with by about 11:30, whereafter we will have an engagement with Ms. Ellen Shabalala. Format will be very much the same. We will allow the evidence leader, Advocate Vanara, to kickstart the proceedings. Advocate Vanara, you've got about 40 minutes, 45 minutes at the absolute latest. Whereafter we will then afford members an opportunity to further interrogate matters that would have been raised. We will allow members no more than 7 minutes for your engagement. So let us request you to prioritize your questions. You will not have more than 7 minutes to engage. And so that you're not ambushed, we'll start with you, Honorable Chauke, so you prepare yourself. We'll do Chauke. We'll go as we've been working in the past. So it'll be Chauke, it will be Killian, followed by Loliwe. We'll come down this way, go that way. So that's how we will do it. Every member would have a maximum of 7 minutes. So please prepare yourself accordingly. When the time arrives, we will indicate that to you. As has been normal practice, could we request everybody that is in this room to put your phone off? We are transcribing what is happening, and the interference from your phone actually interferes with the integrity of the quality of the transcripts. So can we request members and everybody present to put your phone off so that you do not interfere with the integrity of the transcripts that are there. Having done with the formalities and the welcome, Dr. Ngubane, I have been informed that you have chosen to take the oath. And that being the case, sir, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages, you are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside of Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Sir, may you raise your right hand and say so, help me God. Thank you very much. Advocate Vanara, you've got until quarter past 10.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to yourself, honorable members, and to you, Dr. Gobane. Dr. Gobane, can you please, for the record, state your full names?
It's Baldwin Sipong Gobane, but also known as Ben Gobane, because my other name is Benjamin.
You were the chairperson of the SABC board around 2009 to 2013, is that correct?
2010, January to March 2013.
During that period, you're aware the public protector had conducted an investigation on certain happenings at the SABC, is that correct?
Professor Gobane, when you speak, you can put the mic on, he'll put his off. If they're both on at the same time, it interferes. So as you respond, you can press your mic, sir.
That's correct. But only the final report was released when I was no longer at SABC.
Your board was meant to serve a period of 5 years, is that correct?
Up to 2014, yes.
And that board did not finish its term. Can you shed light around the circumstances?
Well, first of all, I must remark, Chairperson, that I got your invitation to come here very late towards Christmas. I'd already made arrangements for my holiday. I then wrote you that it would be impossible to appear on the 10th of January because I'll just be returning from my holiday. I requested that I be given the 16th of January so that I can prepare myself adequately to appear before you. I was not given that, but given the 13th. So I have not had enough time to prepare for this. First of all, your letter...
Please, may you speak into the mic, sir?
Sorry?
Could you speak into the mic?
Your letter gave me the terms of reference of this inquiry. This inquiry was about the current SABC board to seek out its ability to take correct decisions and to lead the SABC. My board, the one I chaired, was never mentioned in those terms of reference. In fact, the terms of reference are even more confusing because you speak of previous boards and you don't specify the timing, the period. You speak of current board members, but there are no current board members because the board of SABC is not in existence. It's not there. So I have difficulty in contextualizing what your purpose is by calling me here. I came because I've served in this parliament for 10 years and I respect parliament. So I came here because the issues that were being discussed were of national importance. I want to make this clear. My head, so to say, was shaved in this house in my absence. You allowed people to comment on me without letting me know that I should be here or send my representative. So I have serious reservations and I reserve my right to take further action if your findings are adverse because I think that would be unfair. So you talk to me about why the board I chaired was dissolved prematurely. We had had, obviously, like any other board, a lot of differences.
Just before you continue, Dr. Gobane, the terms of reference of this ad hoc committee are very clear. They're very clear. And they have been adopted by the National Assembly. 400 members of the National Assembly. So they're very clear. We are very clear on what it is that we want to achieve. The second point, Dr. Gobane, is whilst you might be correct that we were looking at the current board. But maybe we should remind you, sir, that in trying to correct the mistakes of the current board, there were certain matters that had started previous or prior to that board having been in place. So ours is trying to get a holistic picture of what is happening. It's really not about the individual, it's really trying to understand, because the ultimate goal is to try and find permanent solutions to our questions. And then the final point that I thought I should make, Professor Ngubane, is that when we took a decision to invite witnesses so that we could inquisitorially get to the bottom of it, it was not only limited to board members. Everybody that we thought would add value to our work have and were invited. So let's just clarify that it was never about the current board members. It was about everybody that we thought would assist Parliament in fixing up what it needs to do. And to the extent that the questions that are asked can be answered by you, we would request that you do so. Where you say it was outside of your term, that is also fine with us. We will take all those into consideration when we report. And our letter to you, dated the 15th of December, indicated clearly that we'd ask you about what transpired during your tenure. That was our letter to you. It said, please come and report on what transpired during your tenure. And that letter could be made available to you if needs be. So I don't want us to have a debate about where we're going to go and where we're not going to go. You have the right, as you indicate, that if you thought that what we asked you was unfair, you haven't prepared adequately for it, I think that the committee will consider that in our own recommendations, because we wouldn't expect you to understand, or not understand, but to remember everything. And also in terms of your appearance, we had drawn a program as a committee and agreed on the program. And our program was informed by the deadlines that Parliament had set for us. That you were on recess is something that we took into consideration. And thus we allowed you 3 extra days for further preparations. We could not move to the 16th without jeopardizing our own time frames as the committee. And I thought we had corresponded to your lawyers accordingly after they had sent a second or third letter saying, please give us from the 10th to the 13th, or extended beyond the 10th. We tried to meet a middle ground. And I'm hoping that at least would have allowed you more time than would have been if the case was the 10th to do it. And I thought that was a fair compromise from both sides, that we afforded you that opportunity. I really do not want us to have a dialogue in terms of fairness or otherwise of the proceedings. If there is any dissatisfaction, Dr. Ngubane, you can always defer to the committee, and we will consider that in our report. But it has never been the case up to now, not with any of the other witnesses who we also had to juggle around in terms of trying to find a time that was suitable to all of us. So I just want to reiterate, the letter indicated the 15th of December that you will be expected to respond to what transpired during your tenure. We did indeed receive your request for additional time because you had prior arrangements, and we did as best as we could in that regard. And finally, you've just sworn that you will answer all questions legally put to you, notwithstanding the reservations that you've had. That's what you swore to now, that you'll answer all questions legally put to you. So I'm appealing to all sides that we try and conduct and conclude this business as amicably as we possibly can, and everybody would reserve the right to respond to whatever the final outcome is. So that, I hope, Dr. Ngubane, then helps us address the question. I would have thought that these reservations would have been brought to the attention of the committee so that we could have discussed them at some point. But to bring them to the committee at this level is something that we can't not talk to as a committee. Because indeed you were given adequate time. You were given adequate time from the time that we wrote to you and agreed that it's the 10th. And we would have had behind the scenes engagement. So I don't want members to respond. I'm hoping, Dr. Ngubane, that you at least hear our side of the story and that we take this matter forward as we had agreed to, that there would be questions asked, that you would respond to those questions where possible. Members would engage with any further detail that they'd want to engage with, and we would take the proceedings forward. That's the plea from the chair, that's how we proceed with the matters. And indeed, you reserve the right if you feel that you are not adequately prepared to answer a particular question, that you for the record, say that you're not adequately prepared, and we will deal with it in our final report. Can I afford you an opportunity, 5 minutes, to respond if you want to, and then we will go back to our proceedings.
With respect, Chairperson, yes, sir. You cannot compress 3 years' events into 3 days. You say I was given adequate time. It was totally inadequate. There are huge events that happened at SABC. Right from the time of the interim board, we taking over, trying to resolve the issues. But not only that, the problems at SABC begin around 2007, 2008. The last profit report at SABC was in 2006. So it's a long story. It's a deep problem. Just with respect, I want to point that out.
Over to you, Dr. Advocate Venara. You have got until 10:30. I'm sorry.
I respond.
Oh, yes, you may, sir.
All right. You're asking about why the board did not finish its term. There was the Auditor General report, which was ordered by the Portfolio Committee of Communications, that the AG does a full and complete study of events in terms of governance, financial management, compliance with legislation, all sorts of things that govern a good corporation, observing the PFMA, the Companies Act regulations, the Broadcasting Act. The AG did that. But not only that, the Special Investigation Unit also did its work. There were a lot of issues raised, but the issue that collapsed the board was the SIU report dealing with the public viewing areas that were put together for the 2010 World Cup. Now, this was during the tenure of the board I chaired. The SIU questioned the dereliction of fiduciary duty on the part of my board when it came to bidding, when it came to adjudication, when it came to finalizing the suppliers for the public viewing areas. They classified this expenditure as fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure. And the SIU questioned whether, in fact, my board was not criminally responsible. But they put a qualifier. They said the extent of the negligence and responsibility will have to be examined further. Now, the lawyers said this report could not be handled or dealt with by the board. It was a matter for the minister because the board could not be a player and referee. Now the issue comes here. They conveyed this message through Claudie Motsoeneng, who was the acting COO. The board members say they want the report. Claudie says, I can't give you the report because legal opinion says it must go to the minister. Then the fight started. And I said to my colleagues, surely If the legal opinion is such that we must give it to the minister, they will have to do so. Well, many arguments went up and down. They convened a meeting here in Cape Town while I was engaged in Pretoria. They decided that they were going to demote Cloudy from being acting COO to back to being stakeholder manager, executive in the CEO's office. They came to me with a letter. I said, listen, this is in contravention of the Broadcasting Act. You cannot call a meeting, not invite the chairperson when he's in the country and available. And then you take a resolution and now I must execute it. I said, no. I said, in fact, I do not recognize the resolution or your meeting. Then I said, I'm leaving, because the board, to me, had become dysfunctional. So I resigned. That is the story of how that board collapsed.
Thanks, Doc. You're correct. The Public Protector report was released after your board had ceased to exist. But knowing that the report dealt with the happenings during your tenure at the SABC, did you have sight of the report and did you read the report?
I had sight of the provisional report by the Public Protector. I wrote a long letter detailing my response on behalf of the board to the provisional report of the Public Protector. The Public Protector had dealt with Motsoeneng falsifying his matric qualifications. It had dealt with irregular salary increments, and it also had dealt with the increases that he had given his staff. I pointed all this out. For instance, on the issue of matric, Cloudy was appointed at SABC in 1995. Cloudy had been a street kid, without parents, without a home in Kwakwa. He had managed to get sufficient help to go to school. He had reached the level of matric, but he couldn't finish that, so he kept studying on and off. However, because he was a street smart person, he organized plays, particularly during the struggle period, sketches and everything in halls. He went to sports and reported and sent reports to the SABC about sporting events in the Free State. These reports were good enough to be used. Later, in 2003, I think, but it's somewhere there, Alvain Klopper, who was the head of provinces or regions, let's call it, because that was the definition at the time, realizing that the audience ratings in at Radio Lesedi had started to rise from very low levels, which were then characterizing all our radio stations. Their audience ratings were very low, and therefore advertisers were not putting money into those stations. Realizing that the city was doing well and checking why it was doing well, they found that it was because it was reporting relevant news, because Cloudy was supplying information to news. And they concluded that they needed to take him on permanently. Alvain Klopper put it an affidavit to the Public Protector stating exactly why he employed Cloudy Motsoeneng, when knowing, because Cloudy told him when he said, I want you to come full-time to SABC, that he didn't have a matric. He states this in his affidavit to the Public Protector. The then head of station at the time, Cloudy was at Lesedi, also put an affidavit to the Public Protector saying, the issue of matric never concerned us because we took this person because of the skills that he had shown and we incorporated him into the SABC. Naturally, you would have expected this to influence the final report. It didn't. It was not even considered by the public protector, these two affidavits. I also stated that we came to SABC in 2010. Claudia had been at SABC from 1995. Previous boards, previous management had not seen this as a problem, that he didn't have matric. Even Professor Pippa Green said, who was head of radio at the time, they knew that Claudia didn't have a matric, but they needed his skills. There was a political dimension to this. There were many black people, black kids, whose life was impossible because of their family circumstances. The justification was, shall we leave all those people outside the system? As a result, there are many people employed full-time at SABC who do not have a matric, even today. All right. So he goes in and works in the news.
Sorry, Doc. With the greatest of respect, all I was just asking was whether you had sight of the final report of the public protector. And you see, due to time precious, I would love to give you the whole day, but unfortunately I only have 45 minutes. It will help that you answer to the question that I pose so that we can finalize our session.
I did not have sight of the final report because I had left the SABC. But I do know that from Klopas, from Majavu, none of what I had said as a response to the provisional report was included in the final report.
There's evidence before this committee from Mr. Brian Molive, you know the gentleman. At some point he was the acting group CEO of your board, is that correct?
Phil Molive, yes.
He's testified before the committee that Mr. Mutsweleng was the group executive stakeholder relations, was sitting at board meetings at your invitation. What is your response to that?
Phil Molefe has said things under oath that are not true at all. He said, someone gave me a transcript of that we parachuted Saudi from Bloemfontein to SABC.
Okay, so sorry, Doc. As I said, you need to respond to the question I posed. The question I asked you, is it true that you invited Mr. Mutsweleng, who was not an executive director, to sit at board meetings? Yes or no?
No. It's a no. The reason is simple. It was a board decision that Mutsweleng is not only a stakeholder relation person in the office of the GCO, but he was also a stakeholder relations person and spokesperson for the board. There is a written resolution of the board on this matter. We asked Phil Molefe to put this on the intranet, that the board had taken a decision that Claudie would become a stakeholder for the board. He sat in the board meetings, not as a participant, but as a listener to what the requirements of the turnaround strategies were, because he had to communicate this to the unions, to the employees, and generally try and build trust between the board, between the employees, between the unions. That was the purpose.
Wasn't Mr. Mutsweleng reporting to the group CEO?
Mr. Mutsweleng was a stakeholder person in the group CEO's office, as well as to the board by board resolution.
Now, protocol and good governance practice would dictate, and in order not to interfere with the role of the group CEO, that the board maintains minimum contact with the other employees of the corporation, and that its link between the corporation and the board be the CEO. Isn't that the correct protocol?
We get people invited to board meetings. They also get invited to subcommittee meetings of the board. That does not amount to interfering either with the other group executives or with the GCO. Phil Molefe came to board meetings with Claudie. He was a friend of Claudie's. The only problem, later on, they quarreled for some personality differences and so on. But the issue of Claudie, Molefe, the board members, never arose because the duties were very clear.
There's evidence before the committee that Mr. Mutswane, or whoever, prepared a memorandum for a salary hike of 500,000, and you called Mr. Molefe into an office to persuade him to approve the salary or the bonus of 500,000. Correct?
No, not correct. There was never a bonus of 500,000 for Saudi. I, as chairperson, do not originate salary increases or any financial matters. That comes from the relevant stakeholders in the SAPC, in this case, human resources, the finance department. What Phil said was simply trying to damage my name here. He said, he spoke of me threatening him or Claudie. I mean, they never such a meeting. Could you please ask him to produce that letter or that document that he was supposed to? The only document that I've got in my presentation is one of a formal proposal to adjust Mosoneng's salary to the level of the other group executives, because he had come in on a very low base. That was proposed by the head of human resources, signed off by Lulama, who was then the CEO, and I approved it as chairperson because it was not the general salary increase, it was an adjustment.
Who appointed Mr. Mutswaneng as acting COO?
It was the board of the SAPC.
Will there be a resolution of the board to that effect?
Yes, it's supposed to be, but it's part of the problem I have. I've not been able to collect all those documents.
I just want to read from the Public Protector's report what her findings were about Mr. Mutswaneng's appointment as acting CEO. He says the allegation that the appointment of Mr. Mutswaneng as acting CEO was irregular is substantiated. By allowing Mr. Mutswaneng to act without requisite qualifications and for a period in excess of 3 months without the requisite board resolution and exceeding the capped salary allowance, the SABC board acted in violation of the SABC's 19.2 Articles of Association, which deals with appointments, SABC Policy Number HR002/98/A, acting in higher scale, and Chapter 5 of the Broadcasting Act, which regulates acting appointments, and this constitute improper conduct and maladministration.
Not correct.
No, I've not posed the question.
Oh.
This report of the Public Protector has not been set aside by any court of law. You agree?
Well, it came after I left the SABC. So I'm not sure whether they've applied for a review or whatever. But I'm just saying, promotion, not even promotion, appointment to a senior acting position depends on your scale code. If your scale code is equivalent to what the actual acting person, permanent person, like say in this case the COO, if your scale code is equivalent to that, being a group executive, you can be designated as acting in that position. It does not require academic qualifications. It's a matter of the level at which you are.
The question that I posed, Doc, it will help with the greatest of respect that you understand the question and try to respond to the question. The question that I've asked is, is it correct that this entire report has not been set aside by a court of law? If you don't know, it's fine, you don't know.
I was no longer there when the final report came, so I do not know what actions have been taken or are in the pipeline.
See, what worries me, Doc, is you keep on raising this answer that subsequent to your departure at the SABC, you didn't follow the developments around this particular report. Why? Is it because you didn't care?
When I left the SABC, it would have meant they sent me the report. I was engaged. Let me just give you, unfortunately you want very simple questions to complex questions. I was appointed to be chairman of the Land Bank and chairman of the SABC simultaneously. When I ceased my work at SABC, I concentrated fully on my work at Land Bank. I did not visit SABC head offices at any stage after I left. So when I tell you that I did not have sight of the final report, that's true.
No, I'm not disputing that you did not have sight, but I want to put it to you, and this I'm not asking you, I'm telling you, that the reason you did not care about that report, you didn't bother to read the report, is because you didn't care about the damage you've caused the SABC. What is your response to that?
I did not cause damage at SABC. I saved the SABC. It was bankrupt when we came. The regulations were not observed. Even the financial statements for the public service broadcaster and the public commercial broadcaster were not finalized. It was in a mess. We sat around trying to stop the hemorrhaging of money out of the SABC. There was huge theft going on. The AG found that, if you read the AG's report. So don't accuse me falsely of destroying the SABC.
This is 10.1.2 of the Public Protector's report, and it speaks specifically to you, sir. It says the former board chairperson, Dr. Ben Ngubane, further acted irregularly when he ordered that the qualification requirements for the appointment to the position of COO be altered to remove academic qualifications as previously advertised, which was clearly aimed at tailor-making the advert to suit Mr. Mutsuneng's circumstances. She says this constitutes improper conduct, maladministration, and abuse or unjustifiable exercise of power. That is what she's saying.
Could you produce that advert? Because there was no such advert that I altered. Please produce it for me.
Okay. I have not asked you a question as yet.
Yes.
I've just read you what the public protector, in her report, which affected you, which you had no interest in reading, despite seeing a provisional report. So I'm just still reading to you. I'm still to ask you a question, sir.
I wish the public protector has included that advert. Because you see, When someone comes to the public protector and says, Ngubane changed such an advert in order to... Motsoneng's appointment as COO never featured in my time. The only thing that featured was the appointment as acting COO, which required no advertisement. So I would wish to see the advert, because no advert ever came out on Motsoneng's promotion or filling the COO position in my time.
Okay. Doc, unfortunately, it is not... You see, it would have been nicer, it would have served you well, had you read that public protector's report and disagreed with it in the manner in which you disagree with now, and taken it on review and have had it set aside. Now, because you did not read the final report, because of that you did not see what was in the report, you deprive yourself of an opportunity to raise issues that you're raising now. Unfortunately, this committee is not going to entertain that, because in law, the report of the public protector, rightly or wrongly, whatever it says, it has not been set aside. So we take these issues as they stand because they have never been challenged. What is your comment to that?
Whatever the public protector said was said in the context of my work at SAPC. I wasn't going to be able to foot the bill for a review process on my own. It was obviously the corporation's business to take that report on review. So to accuse me of having failed to do so is unfair.
Further, this is what the public protector says, in view of your salary increase between yourself, Ms. Mokgobo, and whatever the HR report was saying. The allegation that Mr. Motsoneng's salary progression was irregular is also substantiated in that Mr. Motsoneng received salary appraisals 3 times in 1 year, as hiking his salary as group executive manager stakeholder relations from 1.5 million rands to 2.4 million rands. His salary progression as the acting chief operations officer concomitantly rose irregularly from 122,961 rands to 211,172, which was a 63% increase in 12 months. And this was in violation of Part 4 of SABC Personnel Regulations and SABC Policy HR002/98/A, acting in higher scale, and this constitutes improper conduct and maladministration. And this is what the public protector says about you. Now, subsequent to this report, this damning report, at least you will agree with me, whether it is true or false, but accepting that this report is there, it has not been set aside. It is damning on you, both personally and as chairperson of the board at the time. Is that correct?
It is not correct.
So is this report praising you? What I've read now are these praises.
Yes, this report is created out of statements that I was not asked to corroborate. Now, if someone gives information and the person being accused is not given a chance to respond to that, let me put it to you. SAP salaries are normally very high. There were a series of adjustments to salaries, but all within the parameters of salaries at SAPC. Itani received a salary progression. He was the highest paid at SAPC. So to address this issue, you would have to take the whole HR documentation and recommendations about everybody who receive salary appropriations at SAPC. Why pick just on one case?
Okay.
Before you intervene, let's just get clarity on this one, Dr. Gubane. And you can continue. I think the question that we should be asking is, are you aware that there was a salary increase of 63%? That's the first question. And secondly, as the accounting officer at the time, the buck stops with you. Do you think that 63% increase in 1 year is something normal? And I think your questions need to be as specific as that, because you were the accounting officer. Somebody gets a 63% increase, regardless of what it is. As the accounting officer, is 63% salary increase something that sat comfortably with you? Not you as Mr. Ngubane, but as the board, because all of you were the accounting officers. Just a sense from you.
Let's put it this way. SAPC is audited by independent auditors. And the AG also came into the picture in the audit of SAPC. None of the audit findings point to that as irregular and improper, wasteful, fruitless expenditure. Now comes a report from the side, which raises an issue that we have considered to be a normal part of the process. Saudi came in from the provinces at a very low salary. He gets given positions that make him reach the group executive level. And the disparity is huge when you consider what people get in the regional offices and headquarters once they become group executives, chiefs. So if you work in that environment, a salary increase of 63%, considering where the person comes from, what stages you are putting him through, is not abnormal. And Saudi came into that situation because of the failing of the very group executives who were earning huge salaries, and therefore the disparities had to be corrected.
Back to my question, Doc. The report of the public protector, particularly the relevant provisions I've just read to you, were they singing praises for you personally and for the board that you're heading, or was it an indictment on you and your board? Yes or no?
No, it cannot be that simple. I told you, with respect, let's not make this something of a very awkward situation. There were complex issues involved. So you can't say just yes or no. As I tell you, this committee will have to go to SAPC and look through the recordings of the meetings, through all the documents, minutes, resolutions, before you can actually come back and judge us. The public protector never did that. So if she chooses to condemn me, it's a choice. But I'm telling you, I will not accept that as condemnatory or praiseworthy, because it's not informed by fact.
You see, I ordinarily I would have loved to entertain and believe you, Doc. But the problem is, you never challenged the report, and the report stands. And I've been asking all of these questions because I want to ask you, you know about consequent management.
Of course I do. But as I say, there was a new board at SAPC. They took over where we left off. They probably have launched, in fact, I think they did launch a request for a review of that report. I would have to verify that, but I was not involved in that because I couldn't do that review on a personal level. It's just impossible.
Why would you not have reviewed it in your personal capacity when some of the findings are damning in your personal capacity?
How many millions would that cost? Who would pay for that?
So that this public protector report speaks very badly about you, both in your personal capacity and in your capacity as a leader of the board. Nothing happens to you. You get to be appointed. You're now the chairperson of ESCOM. Is that correct? ESCOM board.
Now, please, let's just understand each other. I would love to have reviewed this report. Sure. But I had submitted my response to the public protector's provisional response. The fact that she chose not to take that into account, well, I mean, there was very, I was disempowered. If you had said to me, Chairman, I reject your response to my provisional report, give me greater clarity and so on, that would have been a different matter.
In view of this report, that does not talk good about yourself, personally and in your leadership qualities. Is there any reason why this collective, this committee, should not recommend to the National Assembly for you to be removed as the board of ESCOM for the reasons specified in this public protector's report? Is there any reason you could advance?
There are courts in this country. I will challenge that action with all my might, and I'm sure the decent citizens of this country will contribute to my fund to challenge that, because it is not based on fact. It is based on someone's conclusions without taking the necessary trouble to find the truth.
So for you to be removed in your current position, you will find money to fight that cause. And you didn't have to go find money to fight this report that is damning on you.
I've told you, there was a board that succeeded our board. It was up to them to take this on review. It was not for individual board members who had left office. So you are asking me an impossible question to get to a wrong conclusion. You want to remove me from ESCOM? Do so. Do so. I'm there to serve this country. I've served this country from 1994 in different categories. I served well at Land Bank because the circumstances were different. There was a CEO there who knew the duties of a CEO, who knew financial control, who knew good governance. We come to, at the same time at the SABC, the CEOs were very weak. The internal control systems were very weak. Financial controls were very weak. It was a very complex environment. So I wasn't going to go and raise money on a matter that the board at SABC should have taken up. And I have asked, before I came here, as one official, as far as the official is concerned, there is an application in the South Gauteng Court, High Court, to review the public protector report.
Just to correct you, so the application to review is not a court order to set aside the application. Thanks. Mr. Msulwadaka, whom you had recommended as the CFO of the SABC at the time, why was he not eventually appointed to that position? Instead, Ms. Duda was appointed.
Minister Padayachi, who is late, rejected the appointment of the CEO that we had decided on for SABC. Mr. Tau Morwe had been an excellent candidate. We had written to the minister to say we want to appoint Tau Morwe. That's what we have decided. Mr. Padayachi called a special AGM and changed the articles of association that he will take recommendations from the board, but he will appoint. That's how Mr. Taumore was sidelined from becoming the CEO of SABC. Now, unfortunately, Mr. Padayachi passed away. We had to restart the whole process of appointing a new CEO under Minister Dinapule. Dinapule said, give me names that you think are appointable. We had panels. We did that. She appointed Lula Mamakobo, not Phil, and somebody else who was there. Comes the CFO position. We conduct interviews, set up panels. Three names are sent there, including Mr. Tata. The minister says, no, you, who did you interview? We give her the whole list. He says, no, but as far as I know, there are complaints that some of the people were left out, who were shortlisted. So HR says the only name they have who they think must have been a mistake to leave out is Gugu Dudu. So we again constitute the panel. We say, okay, we'll give her a chance. We interview her. We send it in addition to the three names that we have given. The minister appoints Dudu. Now, what we didn't know at the time was that Lulama and Dudu were related to the minister. They were relatives. So the sidelining of our recommendation follows the new articles of association that enable the minister to be the one who decides on these three important positions, CEO, CFO, and COO.
The last question from myself relates to the TNA breakfast show. There were discussions that started during your tenure. Were you aware of those discussions?
The breakfast shows. First of all, Phil hosted 16 breakfast shows, the one you are talking about, without the approval of the board. He ordered 800 copies of New Age every day to come to the SABC. That was not a board decision. Ultimately, we called him in and he gave a business case why these breakfast shows were important. First of all, the SABC was using its staff, was using its production equipment. The advertisements would come in during the shows, and that was good revenue for SABC. For instance, per 30 minutes, the lowest cost or price of a 30-minute advertisement is 90,000 rand. A bigger show like Generations is 110,000 rand per half a minute. Now, when you look at how many breaks come in on these breakfast shows, you can see the revenues that SABC gets. So there was a business case. We said, all right, let them go on. But we didn't initiate that. Phil Molefe initiated it.
No further questions, sir.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chauke, your 7 minutes starts now.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. So, one of my obvious first question will come as a comment, but that we started together in 1994 to set up parliament. Before that, in fact, we were part of the delegation that negotiated the settlement that we have today, which was the role of the leadership that we have played. Looking upon you as the leader, that has shaped and directed this country to be what it is today, is a contribution that we've made. Now, if you now look at the current issues, in particular, the report of the public protector, without getting you into commenting on the final report, but on the provisional report, which normally is not different from the final report. The question that I'll ask you will be, what were the issues that were raised which you responded to in the provisional report, and do we have a copy of the response that you have given to the public protector?
I've summed up, there's a full report of my response in the pack that I brought here. So you can verify that. The issues were public protector's report, were the issues that I have touched on and Dr. Navarra has also raised, and I'm sure you will find sufficient proof of my response. Essentially, I was querying the public protector's conclusions in the provisional report.
So, no, thank you. Yes. I don't have much time. Now, in the in your response, therefore, Dr. Ngubane, you understand the Constitution of the Republic. You now even understand the powers of the public protector. You understand the final report and its findings now, that the powers have now been clarified. Now that this report has come out with this kind of damning evidence against you, what is your view? As a leader, I'm now taking it from where we started. As a leader in this country, by the way, that's how I treat you. What is your view now that your leadership is directly now challenged with the regular mismanagement, the regular appointments of individuals and all of that? What is your view, General?
My view is this country is in trouble. This country is far, far away from the spirit of Cordesa, from the settlement that we came to. People hate each other. They group people into camps. You are in the wrong camp, so we'll finish you off. That's how I view the public protector's report on SAPC. We are taking the one at ESCOM to review. I can tell you that, because this state capture report is full of holes. But I was not at SAPC then, and I'm hoping that the present board is going to go on with the review of that final report. We must sit before a judge and evidence must be brought, and I'm quite sure I will come out clean because there will be evidence for all actions that were taken, responding to very severe challenges that we found in the institution. In my time, let me finish. In our time, the institutions were working well. There is no doubt about that. I was minister in two departments, very heavy schedule, arts and culture, science and technology. We had effective boards, we had effective DGs, we worked well. We had effective executives, we worked well. So don't compare that golden era in South African politics to today. I found a horrible situation. In fact, a friend of mine on the JSE said, you are accepting a hospital pass. I said, look, there's work to be done, we'll try and fix it. So don't talk and compare a golden era with an era which is frighteningly deteriorated.
The one that is deteriorating is not because of the kind of an attitude of individuals who are not the law-abiding citizens who undermine the very same constitution that we have in the country, the constitution that in fact is a cornerstone of the foundation of this country. Is it not particular arrogance that you are talking about that undermines this democracy that we have today? Is not the kind of leaders that stood openly and challenged the public protector? Because you see, when I raise this question, I'm trying to come back to this point because I don't want to raise it, in fact. the issue of ESCOM. It's got nothing to do with this, but it is related to these issues that publicly, you challenge the constitutional, the Chapter 9, challenge the public protector that should regret if Brian Molefe leaves ESCOM. How do you explain that, Dr. Ngubane, vis-a-vis your understanding of this noble constitution that we have put together in 1993, 1994, adopted in 1996? What is your view, Dr. Ngubane, on this?
Please, go and talk to the people outside. You are here supposed to be representing the citizens of this country. Go and talk to people outside and find out their views about Chapter 9 institutions. It is very, very different from what it used to be. I don't want to go into things that may be problematic. Al-Bashir comes to this country. The court orders the government, this is my view, to arrest him, the head of state. They don't order him to be arrested when he goes to New York, to the United Nations, and so on. The courts say, arrest him. The government can't because he's gone. Where are we today? South Africa has moved out of the ICC. So please, make connections. You look, we are not. I'm not challenging the public project. I'm challenging the quality of information on which decisions were made.
But
that's all.
There's a process. There's a process in which we have to follow if we challenge, if we have any dissatisfaction around the finding. And then that process, I think, Advocate Venara has just outlined it, and you know it very well. And I'll take it that there is no way, Dr. Ngubane, that you will say to this House that, in fact, you don't know anything about the final report. You're not telling the truth, I think. With the interest that we have and the caliber of a person you are, you cannot be saying that, in fact, I've not seen it. The issue that comes in is that that report has a serious finding on you, and you are not able, in fact, to stand before this committee and confirm that, in fact, I've seen that report. It has this following. As much as you don't have much, as you say, that the resources to challenge it, I think it must be very clear, Dr. Ngubane, that these findings are very serious findings. In fact, that is the beginning of the mess that we see in SABC as we speak today. The paging of staff, harassment, irregular mismanagement. Because at some point, the final work that this committee must do will be to recover what is state money. And you know it, I think, that the irregular expenditures, fruitless and wasteful, what does PFMA say to us? Will you agree, if we were to take that particular position as a committee, that anyone who is involved in that particular corruption, that money needs to be recovered? Will you have a problem with that? If we were to correct things in South Africa?
SABC started hemorrhaging money from 2007. We found a mess. We tried to correct the mess. We instituted monitoring task teams. We instituted prosecution structures. We did everything. I mean, I reject the idea that the corruption and all the destruction at SABC happened because of us. We found a mess. I've admitted that the public viewing areas for 2010 happened under our watch. And that's why, ultimately, there was a quarrel in terms of who should handle that report. But to say that we caused that is not true.
But lastly, obvious is that we are representing the public, and we're in touch with the public. We talk to the public all the time. We have constituency offices. We interact with the people on the
ground. Okay, your time is up. Honorable Killian.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Ngubane, you took over as the board in 2010, shortly after there was an interim board under leadership of Irene Charnley. You agree with that?
Yes.
Now, Ms. Irene Charnley and her interim board did huge work over, they really extended themselves. They, in fact, parked at the SABC at that time to unravel the challenges, and they, in fact, came up with a very useful report, including SIU, steps to be implemented, etc. How serious were you and your board to implement that? But please be brief, because I want to come to the next issue.
Probably you should refer to the two reports of our SCOPA engagement. We took the report from interim board. In fact, we had a joint session with the interim board when we took over. There was a whole list of issues that had to be addressed. Solly Mokwese, who was the GCO, was taken to task 2 months later by the board for showing no progress. He had set up a turnaround policy unit in his office, run by Itani and by Mr. Mtembu and the acting COO. We were clear what needed to be done, what needed to be prosecuted, what disciplinary actions to take, how to strengthen internal audit and so on. We were very clear about that, but there was no traction because the people who were supposed to carry that out didn't do it. They were part of this setup, part of this. That's why Claudia had to be brought in from outside to try and help the CEO have traction.
Thank you. Now, Dr. Ngubane, that actually brings me to that point. When Mr. Motsweneng was parachuted in, apparently he was parachuted into the office of Mr. Mokwetle, and thereafter he just escalated in the positions that he held and his salary increases were approved. Now, the problem of the SABC at that stage, you're right, was finances. How could you, as the chairperson of a board, allow processes to set root under your guidance as a board and under your leadership that was in fact contravening sound governance principles and King III principles? How did you allow such irregular actions? Why did you not move these processes through your board and in fact ensured that the executive also performed their functions and reported to the board as is expected of such an institution?
We did all that. Ultimately, we said, Mr. Motsweneng, we are going to back to SCOPA in February. In February 2012. This was about the end of October. After two sessions with SCOPA, we got a hiding second to none. The acting COO was totally incapable of taking all these issues that had come out from the interim and together with Itani, taking them through. So we said, we are going back to SCOPA. We have not had satisfaction from the acting COO. Mr. Motsweneng, establish a task team now and come back with a plan. He did, appointed people from different areas of the SABC executive. They sat through almost the whole December. And in January, they came back with a report that for the first time, we could take to SCOPA and have satisfaction.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Ngubane. Now, the problem lies with the implementation. You see, we've seen so many turnaround plans that the problem lies with the implementation. And that is where your board failed. Because if you look at the public report, public protector's report, that is essentially your comments on the interim report are captured. But the findings in the end are very unfavorable, and it really points. And I would like to come to the issue of your board's collapse. I put it to you that you were due to come before the Communications Portfolio Committee in the week, in the first end of February 2013, that there was a concern because Mr. Shlaure Motsweneng started phoning board members. He held onto the SIU report, saying to board members, I am sitting with a report that implicates you. You should rather resign. And in the process, all of them realized that was a setup. They called a meeting in terms of the Act. And can I just say to you, it's not an irregular meeting. It was chaired by the deputy chairperson in accordance with section 1310 of the Act. It was a duly constituted meeting, notwithstanding the fact that you were not present, and you were upset with the resolution taken, which was a vote of no confidence that the acting COO at that stage was using the SIU report to blackmail members of the board. What is your comment on that?
It was not Mr. Motsweneng who said the board cannot handle this because they're implicated. It was legal opinion. Legal opinion said that report must go to the minister. The minister must order further investigation. So the other issues you are raising, I cannot comment about because I was not at the meeting. But I'm telling you what I knew, and I said, surely we must send it to the minister because we are involved. We admitted that we're involved. It was the extent of the involvement that still had to be investigated.
Thank you. And I would like to conclude by what the public protector has found about your leadership style, that you acted like an executive chairperson and not as a person who operated within your board. And that was, in fact, very evident in the meeting, by the way, that you apparently not attended together with the board and the public protector. You had your own meeting with the public protector after the board met. And they were not aware of the salary increases of Mr. Motsweneng. So nothing of that nature was in fact presented to the board. Now, within months after the appointment of the new board in 2010, there were already concerns raised. There was a vote of no confidence in your leadership style. It was presented to Parliament, Portfolio Committee in Parliament. So right through your reign, there was a problem within your board. It was not only at the end. What is your comment on that?
The only difference we had was the appointment of the head of news. We differed in terms of the criteria that were going to be used. However, at the end, the board took a resolution to appoint Phil Molefe as head of news. We all agreed on that because we visited the scores, we revisited the criteria, the minister was involved. You know, ultimately everybody agreed that of all these candidates, his interview record showed that he had a credible plan to deal with the austerity measures, which was to reduce 900 million rand budget in news to 600 million. He had worked this out very, very clearly. So initially with that, we had a big fight. We came to Parliament. I mean, Parliament let us go back to try and solve it. There was never a vote of confidence taken by that board against me. Otherwise, I would have left.
Chairperson, there was in fact a presentation made to our portfolio committee at the time, and I can remember I was part of the meeting where the board members expressed their serious concern about the way that the board is being chaired under your chairmanship. So unfortunately, part of this is part of the history. In fact, that also precipitated the resignation of four very prominent members of the board at a very early stage within the first year, amongst other Ms. Barbara Masakela, with a very proud history in the struggle, etc., the deputy chairperson, Feleng Sekha, Mahato Melo, and David Nedry. So clearly there was a concern, and these people expressed their views and as a collective accepted responsibility, but there was no appetite for that, unfortunately, it appears. And consequently, we believe that the public protector's findings are of a serious nature and actually points to what we experience as members of parliament, but through our committee work as well. And in fact, I think it must be borne out. And it's a serious lesson for us as parliament to know how to direct state-owned companies and to make them accountable to parliament. And this process is part of a renewed vigor, I would say, to ensure that entities and departments account effectively to Parliament and that Parliament would do their oversight work very thoroughly. Thank you, Chair.
Respond to that. We have been to portfolio committee meetings at SABC. They accepted the progress that we were making. In fact, it was the portfolio committee that congratulated us for being able to save enough money to pay back a major part of the Nedbank loan, which was supported by the government guarantee in 2 years, when the agreed term of payment was going to finish in 4 years. That was because of the stringent controls that were put in place. It didn't happen by a miracle. When you lead in this country, you have to be tough. I'm sorry to say. Some people may differ. Democracy is good, but democracy has got to be supported by decisive action. I decided the problems were so huge that we could not afford to appoint people just because of certain track records, just because we like them. We had to appoint people who can work. Back to Motsoeneng again. He helped me to re-establish trust between the unions and the staff at the SAPC. If you wish, please conduct an interview with the staff and do a quick survey. He eliminated labor brokers at SAPC. He eliminated the freelancing system, which meant a lot of people were not covered because they were employed through the labor brokers. He made them permanent. They are now fully covered, receive all the benefits. He went to the regions and took me there a number of times to talk to people at regional offices to say, we know your troubles. We are attending to them. We changed the structure of reporting by the regions, even in including some elements of procurement in the regions. Now, we have done a number of things to make SAPC work. I'm sorry that you are not seeing it, but we have reported to the portfolio committees and they've been satisfied, at least in my time, that we are making good progress.
Honorable Oliver, your 7 minutes starts now.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, Dr. Ngubane. You've just said you can't appoint people due to their track record. I want you to share with us, how do you sit here and say that when Ms. Nompilo Dlamini, in her statement submitted to this committee, she is indicating that you recommended a company by the name of Dick Foxton to be the spokesperson and publicist for Lulama Mukobo when you were still at SAPC?
I did not appoint Dick Foxton. Dick Foxton was a publicist who said, I can repair your image with the press. I discussed this with Lulama because she was the CEO. Dick Foxton and Lulama then went into a long engagement as to how we can bring the editors together, we can help to project the changes that were taking place at SAPC. It wasn't I who did that.
You did not even recommend them because you knew them from a previous company you worked for?
No. I knew that Dick Foxton was generally a publicist, let's call it like for a better name, or what would you call it, an advocacy person. Now, there are many companies that do advocacy work. I don't have the power to appoint. So I just merely said, this person has offered to do this for you. I'm not, when you say, I'm not saying people must be appointed on a track record. What I mean is, it must be horses for courses. I may have a certificate hanging on the wall, but I may not be able to execute what the task now needs. You know, and so, Saudi did some wonderful work, despite the fact that he did not have a formal university qualification. I can read you the whole thing, I've put included it here, which
please
made
don't
me...
go there, Doc, on reading it.
Sorry?
Don't read it, Doc, I don't have time, please.
Okay, fine. But anyway, it's there in the documents.
Just before you carry on, I'll give you that time. Just on this point, Professor Ngubane. And this matter is very serious. What Honorable Oliwe put to you now is an affidavit that we've received. And I want to read what it says. Dr. Ben Ngubane seemed very angry while standing
in front of the committee, he said, open quotes, "I am told that a young girl is dictating, deciding on her own and telling us, board and executives, who should award tenders in this organization. I am warning you," pointing at Ms. Dlamini, "as long as I am in charge here as chairperson of the board, this will not happen." Now, this is an affidavit that is presented before Parliament, you indicating that you didn't participate in this thing. Both of you cannot be correct. And that's why I'm putting it to you, sir, that if indeed you stand by what you are saying, I will, and we will believe it. But then this person has misled Parliament through an affidavit. So the point that I'm actually raising is, when Ms. Loliwe says to you, "Did you recommend, did you participate and so on, and you said you don't have the power to do it," do you stand by that position? Because we certainly will follow this up with what you are saying, because there's a contradiction.
With respect, sir, I don't even know who Ms. Dlamini is. There was a dispute in the supply chain management. I was asked to try and sort out that. There were some fire extinguisher equipment and so on. It's a long story. I don't have the record. But I warned that you cannot just give tenders as pure without following the proper supply chain management structures. I really don't even remember her, but I remember the occasion that there was a huge dispute and I was trying to settle that dispute.
Thank you very much. For the record, let it be pointed that somebody has lied to Parliament if we have these both very contradictory stories. We'll get to the bottom of it, and there will be dire consequences for whoever has misled Parliament. Continue, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair. You also said little did we know that Mkobo and Duda were related to the minister. Is that statement implying that the two were appointed despite their meeting requirements for the post they were appointed in? And if no, what do you mean by saying little did you know that they were related to the minister? What is the significance of that?
The significance of that is that there was no declaration at the time of interview. We had a talent search company which interviewed all candidates a priori. They even searched the credit bureau in terms of finding out more about the people. So people had to declare interest up front. When it came to investigating the allocation of, I think, about 1.7 million rand, which was unauthorized by Ms. Duda, to the conference that was organized by the minister, the investigating team or committee, which was governance committee chaired by Tami Kaplaiji, this issue came up that in fact they were related to the minister. As far as we are concerned, if we knew this, it would have sent warning signals that, you know, let me just tell you for a simple fact. Phil Molefe got the highest marks in the interview, followed by another candidate whose name I can't remember properly.
Apologies, Doc. I don't have more time. Can you stick to the two, Mkobo and Duda?
Yes. I said we were very concerned when we discovered during the investigations that, in fact, there was a relationship, because there's cast doubt in terms of whether, in fact, it was because they were capable or not.
You also alluded to the fact that Mr. Motsoeneng refused to give the SIU report to the board, saying the report is to be given to the minister, and you did not do anything. What are the implications of non-executive being dictated to by an executive?
You know, we were acting with the legal advisors through the COO office. Motsoeneng was the acting COO. So all correspondence with the lawyers was coming through his office. And the lawyers had said this matter must go to the minister. And that's all that the dispute was about.
You were the chair of the board. During your tenure, you had Mr. Mutsweneng who refused to give the board a report. Nothing happened. You also indicated that Phil hosted the 16 breakfast shows without the approval of the board. You go further to applaud that that had spin-offs of 90,000 for certain adverts and all the other views. Were you as the board then or playing your role? And as a chair, why did you allow this scenario to happen?
The whole issue became an issue for the board because there was no proper contract with the newspaper, New Age. So we wanted to regularize this. And so Phil Molefe gave us a business case why this must continue. And so we said there was a good case for it, let it continue.
So during your reign in SABC, if what you do brings in money, even if it is irregularly done, if it gets applauded, as in this case?
Well, I don't know. I mean, really. The event happens. Ultimately, we raise issues about what contract is this, what are the terms, and so on. We get it given an explanation. By the way, the news office has a lot of autonomy in terms of carrying out productions. So ultimately, we got a good business case, and so we said this can continue.
Why did you question it initially if they had their own autonomy? Why did you raise it as an issue that he hosted 16 breakfast shows without the endorsement of the board if they had their own autonomy?
For instance, Phil Molefe went to India to look for partners to start the 24-hour news channel.
Apologies, Doc. My time is about to end.
I'm just giving you the background that things get started. Like he wanted the 24-hour news channel, but to use SABC 3 as the 24-hour news channel. When he came back to this, after a long process, we found that, in fact, we couldn't use SABC 3 because it's a commercial station in terms of its license. So what I'm saying, things happen, they initiate things, but there comes a time when the board gets involved because now it must finally approve that as a project or as a new initiative.
Lastly, Doctor, you said controls at SABC, the CEOs, the COO were very weak. What can you trace as your legacy to strengthen them whilst you were there as a board member and a chair?
The processes that we undertook to stop the stealing of money. There were companies formed at SABC to channel funding from advertisements to different companies and individuals. For instance, the TV sales were being registered on Landmark, which is a computer system. But for the person to claim a commission, it had to go into SAP. So you put it on Landmark, quickly register it on SAP, collect the commission, and then erase the paper trail. We changed all that. That's why SABC could recover and have enough money to pay the loan in a matter of 2 years. We put in many, many controls in place, and the hemorrhaging stopped. What caused the soliciting of a government guarantee of 1.674 billion? It was because people were stealing money. We stopped that. And I think that, to me, was a major achievement in terms of dealing with the issue at the public broadcaster.
Thanks, sir.
Dr. Ngubane, just for clarity for our purposes on the last point that has been made. The Public Finance Management Act makes the board the accounting authority. And it says you must prevent unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless expenditure. It's the law of the land. The Companies Act spells out the fiduciary duties of directors. Part of it is the protection of the assets of the company. And you've just said now to Ms. Loliwe, Mr. Molefe and other people broke the law, but regardless of the fact that they broke the law and accrued unauthorized, irregular, or fruitless expenditure by breaking the law, as the accounting authority, the only thing that mattered to you was that ultimately brought revenue. Is that what you're saying to us? That as directors, you allowed this thing to happen. Contrary to the Public Finance Management Act, contrary to the Companies Act, and you're saying, well, in hindsight, it brought revenue in, and therefore, as the accounting authority at the time, you didn't see this to be a problem. Is that how you're justifying? Because the question was, why did you allow, if indeed you did, why did you allow Phil Molefe to enter into the TNA contract without following supply chain management and proper procurement? Because as the accounting authority, you at the time would have been expected to reverse that. Why did you allow it to continue?
Well, you know, there are many outside broadcast events and so on that take place. As I say, the editorial's office, the news office, takes many initiatives, all right? Otherwise, if we didn't do that, very few important things would happen. The breakfast shows didn't cost SABC any money. SABC flighted the breakfast shows, but didn't pay anything for them. It was the TNA that arranged the venues, that got the ministers to speak, that brought the breakfast. It became clear to us that there was no reason to stop that because we are not losing money. And our shows were using our own people for production. For instance, Peter Ndoro has become an exceptionally good anchor person through those shows. So there was advantage even in training. So when this case was put to us, why we must now formalize this relationship, we said yes. It wasn't a matter of we are condoning fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure.
It's 11 o'clock, it's taking longer than we thought. I don't know if members want a 5 minute comfort break. If not, we can carry on. As yourself as well, we thought by this time it'll be over, but it's been a very intense meeting. So we can continue. I'm just looking that we've done a quarter of the people. I don't know if you want a 3 minute comfort break. All of us, it's an absolutely 3 minute comfort break so that we can continue. I'm sure you have your own arrangements of getting back and other people will join us shortly. But can we have a 3 minute comfort break? We'll come back and we will then continue with Mr. Singh. Is that okay with you, sir? Is that okay, members? 3 minutes and Mr. Singh, you'll be next.